early on in my parental leave, the LA Review of Books reached out and asked me to write a piece. And I was like, great, cool, I will. And then just like absolutely bailed. And it was like the first time I'd ever just like totally fucking bailed on something as a writer. And
hi, welcome to Writing Stories, your spot for conversations with contemporary authors about how books go from an idea in someone's head to an object on a shelf.
I'm Brianna Vigna Tapper, and my guest today is Lucas Mann. Mann is the author of four books: Lord Fear, a memoir; Class A, Baseball in the Middle of Everywhere; Captive Audience, On Love and Reality Television; and most recently, the essay collection Attachments, Essays on Fatherhood and Other Performances. Mann's writing often reminds me of Leslie Jameson's work, and Jameson describes Attachments as fierce and funny and agile, with an animating engine of love. Kirkus called the book heartfelt and perceptive, and Rachel Yoder, author of Night Bitch and guest on episode 10 of Writing Stories, writes that in Attachments, Lucas Mann has embraced far-ranging and clear-eyed observation that's as astute as it is honest. My favorite part of the book is what Mann calls the short emotional release valve essays, including his essay At the Playground, which I think is a shining example of writing that, as David Foster Wallace says, makes your head throb heart-like. In this episode, we talk about the perception that books about fatherhood don't sell, about the false dichotomy between intellectual writing and embodied writing, and what you do when the publishers who published your previous work don't even respond to your latest manuscript. Here's Lucas Mann, author of Attachments.
I mean, fatherhood is such an interesting subject to me, in part because of this, like the, you know, the piece that I wrote for Slate, again, it was a very different type of piece, but I was like, you know, I was just like getting a lot of emails from stranger dads being like, it was really hard for me to like, thank you for articulating that. I am reaching out and saying that moved me, and I have feelings too. And I like did not know what to do with that and shut down, which is my problem. But you know, so it does feel like there's this very strange, it almost feels like a subject that it like sits right on this tipping point between like, are people waiting to be like, it feels silly to say that I need to be feel seen, but maybe I did. Or not. I don't know.
Like fathers might be on a tipping point waiting to say that they feel
yes.
How did you start working on Attachments?
I was just in a place where I wasn't writing and didn't really feel much like a writer and had only really ever since publishing my first book, everything had just sort of organized that the way that I existed as a writer was to be like, and then there is this other larger project that I'm going to like obsessively tackle until that thing is done. And I'd always loved writing shorter pieces and having fun experimenting with it, but it was sort of like, okay, I guess I don't do that anymore. And then that felt impossible for a while there. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't getting anything done, which, you know, a combination of parental leave followed by quarantine followed by, you know, any number of things that I think a lot of people listening probably had the exact same experience. But honestly, I went early on in my parental leave, the LA Review of Books reached out and asked me to write a piece. And I was like, great, cool, I will. And then just like absolutely bailed. And it was like the first time I'd ever just like totally fucking bailed on something as a writer. And I had this like,
this is when your daughter was a baby?
She was like 3 months old. And I think I had just like, again, just as sort of like, I am the person that will say yes to this and deliver. Of course, that is who I have always been. And this will feel good to be able to do that. And then I, of course, did not do that and then felt terrible.
Can you just say like, so how did you decide that you were not going to do it? Or did you not decide and just like not respond? Like, tell us.
I think my wife had just gone back to work. So it was me and my daughter all day. And I was like, you know, it'll be a thing where like we get somebody to do childcare for like 2 hours at least once a week. And in those 2 hours, I think I had like a conversation months earlier with a writer that I really admired who'd had a kid who was like 9 months older than mine. She was like, that's the amazing thing is when you first hit the coffee shop And you're like, now I have this renewed purpose. And I was like, obviously I will too. And then I just like really didn't. And so I think I did that four times maybe. And they were like, cool, you got a month. And then by the end of the month, I was just like spinning gears and frankly being like, if I saw somebody that I knew at the coffee shop or could text somebody and be like, hey, you want to hang out at this coffee shop? I was like, wow, it feels so much better to see other people than it does to write. Like if I'm going to spend time not with my kid, I'm going to like just be like bullshitting with my friends. So I was like, all right, well, screwed that up. And then she was the managing editor at the time. I think she's the head editor of LARB now, Madai Ocker. She reached back out like a year later, maybe more, to be like, and they were very generous when I sent this like pathetic apology email. Like it was a really hand-wringing thing. And they were like, yeah, it happens. Basically, it was like, you know, they gave me another chance to be like, to have an occasion to write an essay.
Okay.
And there was an enormous amount of freedom to the assignment, which was really nice. Mm-hmm. Actually, the weird thing is the only certainty that I had for a long time in the idea of this being a collection was like, I have this essay and this essay is going to be like a central point. And now it's not in it. It ended up sort of almost like not feeling as connected to it. But it was a piece that was theoretically about rewatching. It was like a theme issue on the idea of recursivity or something. And I was like, I'm going to write about rewatching The Office and the pleasures of rewatching and revisiting art versus, I think there was like I went on like a whole random thing about like not liking, you know, expanded universes. I'd rather just sort of like screw around in the same universe over and over again and thinking about nostalgia and, you know, the kind of cultural criticism-y stuff that I had always liked to do and had done a lot in my previous book. And then within that, there ended up being this whole parenting aspect, right? And that idea, it centered around this idea of like recursivity and how recursive watching things felt, but also everything felt at that moment in time. And I was like, oh wow, this felt good. And like, I'm proud of this piece. And I think it started from there being like, you know, I'm just going to like be a writer again.
What did you want this book to do for the reader?
It was important to me to treat parenthood from my perspective, from an artistic and experiential point of view, as opposed to like a think PC point of view, or as opposed to like a pop psychology point of view. I wanted it to feel as sort of undecided and loose and like welcoming to evolution or change or rupture, whether that was formally in the way that the essays were written, whether that was in sort of my perspective or my voice in different ones. And I think that was one of the benefits of it being a collection for me, right? I don't think that this is the first collection I've ever written. I've written three sort of narrative length books. I could not imagine writing about this subject that way. I think perhaps because of like this accruing sense of responsibility to create something that feels like a package that might provide something coherent to somebody. And ultimately for me as a writer, and then I guess if I hope anything for the reader, it's like, I want this to feel experiential. I want it to feel like it's, you know, like the doctor hitting your knee with the mallet and your knee moves, right? Okay. even if there isn't something that you intellectually agree with or that is exactly recognizable to your life, that there is a tone and a feeling and a sort of emotional pitch that rings true to the sort of overwhelming nature of the experience, I guess.
Can you talk about how these essays became a book or when you started thinking that they could be a book?
And I finally had like a call with my agent that was partially a call to be like, hey, the things that I said that I was going to do at one point in time, I'm never going to do. And then also like I'm working on this sort of idea. And so then I wrote a couple more like with that in mind or with the idea of like, if there's something tying these together, it is this sort of experience of fatherhood, but mediated through these different larger subjects, these different sort of like, you know, I'm writing about watching this thing, or I'm writing about sports in this way and it has to do with parenthood, or I'm writing in some way about sort of like conceiving of environmental collapse through and after like five or six of those, I think it was, it felt like when I sat down to write that there was like actually a direction in mind. And my agent was like, you know, I think this is coherent enough that we can write a book proposal to attach to what would have been like half the book at that point. But I don't think I was conceiving of it as half of a book or as for sure a book until four or five essays in maybe.
Okay. And how did you imagine in your head, what did the connections between the essays look like to you?
it was hard because I'd never written a collection, and I had such sort of a particular track record of thinking about connection through a book in this sense of like a narrative moving and tightening mm-hmm. in these ways. So it was really hard for me to conceive of it as a holistic experience. So I almost thought of it more as, and I don't know if this is the helpful thing or was a helpful thing, but it was like, I want to think of it as like chances to just do different things that feel maybe as different from each other as possible. And sort of like, on a selfish level, it was like, I haven't really worked in the short form in so long. It's like, I want to play around with like a essayist's whole bag of tricks. And if I can show that in a way that feels coherent because there is this overarching thematic structure, but that overarching thematic structure is not a whole narrative book, then it was like, all right, maybe I can sort of get away with that in some ways. Right. So there was this sense of like, oh, cool. Like, can I do something more lyric or something that feels almost like a prose poem? And can that live in the same collection as like, it would be cool to get back into more sort of like long form cultural criticism work or like even literary journalistic work? And can I give myself an opportunity to do those things that I think I can do and that I like to do, but wouldn't kind of be able to otherwise unless they had this shape around them? I don't know if it's the best idea in the world to base a book proposal around like, let me have fun, but also it's about this.
Well, it worked for you.
Yeah.
Sorry, so you sold it. You sold it on proposal.
Yeah. There was probably, like half the book, half of the essays were there. And then on
proposal. Were there. Yeah. And was there any kind of like, some of the essays are going to ask a question and some of the essays are going to answer it, or like, no. Okay. It
was just one thing that was clarifying was that I guess to do, and this was, I find book proposals to be a nightmare and very hard, and they make
so
me
hard,
way more depressed than anything. And I 100% depressed about this one. I was like, are we sure we got to do this? But I guess within book proposals, right. And this is where, the sort of all of the different types of nonfiction come into play, right? Because you're like talking about a nonfiction book proposal. It's like, well, I'm not going to, like, do I look like I can do a market analysis? Like, I don't know how to do that. Like, I don't, but I do think like having that structure of like my agent being like, well, they at least need to have like a sketched out idea of like, these will be the other essays in the book. Many of which weren't. Like, I ended up being like, this is a terrible idea after that. This is in writing other things. But at least being forced to think holistically or think in a structured way of being like, if these are the things that are here, what notes do these hit? What maybe isn't explored in these things? Does it feel too heavy? And can there be some, like, does there need to be something lighter? In my mind, I was thinking about sort of the balance between a book that felt personal essay-ish and also like cultural criticism-ish at the same time, which is something I've kind of always been interested in my work. But like from an essay collection standpoint, if it's not going to be a book that's doing both things at the same time, it's like, all right, am I veering in a direction that feels like this is entirely a collection of personal essays? And do there need to be more sort of overtly critical ones on the back end or vice versa? So it was helpful in a way to just sort of think about like notes to hit, but not in the sense of like answering questions or having like something cohesive moving from one to the next, I guess.
Okay. So you were thinking about like heavy versus light, and you were thinking about more personal essay versus more cultural criticism.
And also sort of length experience, this sense of like, oh, did a lot of these end up becoming much more digressive and longer than I thought? And then it's like, okay, like, would it be nice to have like three very short essays in the piece that feel more just almost like emotional release valves, and could they be placed here and here and here, right? And so again, it was almost less like, it had less to do with subject matter and more like sort of trusting myself and trusting that the fun of the book would be letting the essays evolve subject matter wise in terms of figuring out what I wanted to say in each one, but wanting to have like the levers calibrated in terms of like tonal experience of each, I guess.
That makes a lot of sense. I like levers calibrated is a good way of thinking about it. But you said some ideas that were in the proposal you decided were terrible and you took them out. How come? How did you decide that they were terrible?
So when I tried to write them, I think a lot of it, And I have found this actually to be true of myself in anything that I've written about, that like I have this weird knee-jerk grad school-y response in mind of being like, in my mind, anything that I write, when I think about what I want it to be at first, it skews way more intellectualized and way less personal than it ends up being. And I think that's because I have a very stupid leftover, like, they're smarter that way. And I want to be a smart writer. And I'm not just a memoirist, which is a stupid thing, because I look at memoirists and I don't think that. I'm like, you're a memoirist. That's great. But I don't know. It's like this weird thing of being like, I see, you know, I am a cultural critic in these ways. You're like, I can do, like, I've interviewed people before. Huzzah. And like wanting to make sure that that's like, as though I'm like scoring points for all these things, which objectively I find deeply annoying, but it's hard. And for whatever reason, when I conceive of a project on like a sliding scale of personal and research to personal and critical, I'm always convincing myself that it's like 75% more in the direction of the critical than it ends up being. And so I think a lot of working through a project and then editing a project is like being honest with myself of like, do I want this essay to be here, or do I want this part of this essay to be here only because I want to show off that I thought about it and did a little work to research it, or does it feel necessary to the piece? And so even like that very first essay that I wrote for the LA Review of Books, which I really, really like, I was just like so certain that that was going to be a piece that was like standing there as like a touchstone, because I felt like it showed this like exact combination that I wanted of a piece that like talked about my life as a father, but really did it in this sort of like, you know, pop criticism way that felt smart and, you know, made reference to all these things and yada, yada, yada. And I think a lot of the essays end up doing that, but being able to be like, if I actually think about the experience of what this book is now and what this book is at its best, does this essay need to be here for anybody's satisfaction other than my own at the fact that I did it? And I think for some of the ones that were originally in the proposal, it was that thought process as well. And then the ones that ended up replacing them, I think, were more deeply felt and unabashedly what they were, you know?
Mm-hmm. I can relate so hard to that question of like, am I putting this here because it somehow is going to make me feel smarter, or it's going to feel less self, sort of more like less like a memoir. Right. And for me, I think it's a lot of like internalized misogyny, because we associate self-writing so much with women.
I mean, I think there's unfortunately probably an internalized misogyny in the way that I'm thinking about it as well. Right. And I think if you I went to graduate school for nonfiction, and it felt like so many of those conversations really came down to the like, who had a lot of feelings, or had like a bad thing happen to them, or who was like really more of a poet, or like actually more of an intellectual. And I think even in the moment you could smell bullshit in that conversation, right? And it falls into these weird camps where it's like you either have to be like, the most important thing you can do is tell a personal story honestly and like put the blood on the page, or you're like, aren't we tired of the memoir? But like what I should do is like John McPhee's thing over and over again, right? And then I think the writers that I really admire are often ones that are sort of moving within those boundaries, but that's sort of the mold that I always saw myself in as a writer, and that I think frankly plays to my strengths best as a writer. But again, yeah, even within that, you still get fooled into almost creating a value structure within the essay that you're writing of what parts of the essay are worthy and what parts aren't. And then maybe you've had this experience, but like you'll show an essay to somebody and like the parts that you to yourself are like, this is like whatever, they're like, that's really beautiful. And then the parts that you're like, hell yeah, I'm a genius, they're like, I really could have done without that.
Right.
And then, sort of like reckoning with like the actual reality of what you should want somebody to think and feel when they read your piece. And I think sort of like remind myself, and I think this is important for any nonfiction writer, that like the idea that the more memoristic impulse is not an intellectual one is foolish, right? And that I think ultimately, I think this, the parts of this book that felt smartest were the ones that also felt most embodied and maybe less concerned with, you know, entering myself into a conversation about the tradition of whatever, you know.
So you've sold multiple books. This is like kind of this fun project where you're playing around with different things and kind of like getting yourself back into writing. So was it not a big deal when you sold it?
Oh, it was a huge, I was certain it wasn't selling. You know, I think my agent's sort of running joke about me has always been like, you know, and I think she says this lovingly, like we sort of say that I sort of take things that theoretically should be sellable and make them weird to the point where they're like less bestsellery, right? That's I wear that as a badge of not pride, but also maybe a little bit of pride.
Foolish
pride. It hasn't helped me, let's say. She said when we were first talking about this project and the idea of like, oh man, like, you know, this is sort of a sidebar, but it was like she had a kid like 6 months after me. And so we were having conversations about selling this book when like we had both just come off of parental leave. And I would my kid would be napping and I'd be in the other room talking to her. And she would like steal time away where she lives in New York, and she would do like alternate side parking by her house. And so she would like conduct her calls, like waiting for the street sweeper to come by. And so we'd have these like conversations about this book and also the circumstances around it, which was really lovely. And I really appreciated those. And I think she was really, she felt, I think, more confident about the commercial possibility of this book than a lot of my stuff generally. I think maybe because of this sense of like, there isn't a much fatherhood literature. And I think we maybe were wrong in that it's not like, oh, there isn't that much fatherhood literature, so people will be waiting for it to buy it. And in fact, it was like, oh no, there isn't, like, we've made this decision before. Which, you know,
have perhaps a sort of broader social theory about why people might not think that books about fatherhood would sell. I don't have one, but I could.
No, I mean, I guess there's sort of that, there's like that, like almost cliche that like men don't read. Okay. But I don't know. I also wonder if it's less just like a book about fatherhood, but in particular, a book about fatherhood that like formally and stylistically and in its interests behaves like a book that you would maybe more associate with motherhood. I mean, even that's kind of like a weird and fraught thing to say, right? But like and I do think that within nonfiction, there's different types of nonfiction, and I maybe the one that I consistently write into is less associated with sort of like a cis straight male readership. But even that, who knows, man? I don't know. And then there was even this question of like, is this book for dads?
Yeah. What'd you say? Because you have to put that in the proposal, right? Like, what did you say is your ideal reader?
I don't know. I mean, look, like the kind of work that I have always done and the work that I've always liked and the writers that I'm sort of peers with and friends with, it's always been like a weird thing of sort of like me writing from my perspective into a conversation that is not from my perspective usually. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways this just kind of feels like a blown up version of that. I mean, I remember like my wife saying to me when the book was on submission being like, oh, I guess I always thought of this as like, in my mind, it was like the kind of book that like my friends would hope to give to their husbands, which felt like I thought an accurate depiction perhaps. But you know, I mean, again, maybe it's part of a flaw that I didn't really think it through. And I don't think I've ever had a good handle on thinking about desired audience. But yeah, this was passed on by every major place that we sent it to. And also, you know, the vast majority of the sort of like quote unquote major indies. And it was, I think, over a year it sat there. And I had pretty much resigned myself to like, wow, it's crazy that I was that wrong. Like this is not going to happen. And resigned myself. It's not like I was, you know, happy about it, but I was just like, this ain't working.
What did the editors say when they rejected it?
So first of all, there's just like the nature of publishing sort of during the tail end of the whatever you want to consider the pandemic period, but then also continuing to now, in which like it's just a bloodbath out there. Mm-hmm. And so the most frustrating thing was just like getting non-responses, frankly, mm-hmm. from people who like knew my work and knew who I was and had asked to see it.
And then they didn't respond.
Perfectly frank, or in some cases, even at my previous publisher. Just like
they didn't respond at your previous publisher?
Not after they got the manuscript, no. I would say no hard feelings, but that is not true. But, you know, I mean, I don't think this is unique to me. I think that's just sort of how it's been out there. And then I think that the responses that we, you know, were getting was, yeah, this sense of just sort of like, I find this moving, but it's hard to think about how to sell it. And frankly, it's hard, you know, just from talking to other writers, and I'm sure you've had this conversation before too, it's really hard to get a sense of, because like so much of the well-intentioned feedback from editors, I think often falls into the sense of like, hey, I think you're great. I like this book. I think it's pretty obviously not going to work. I hope the best for you. And like, I say that not as a knock. Like, I think that's genuinely sincere. Like, you know what I mean? They know the market better than I do. And, yeah. and so I think it was, you know, it was a lot of that. I think some got pretty close and then just couldn't, you know, whatever on the last stage of the buy-in, couldn't get in. There were some like, we have in the past had fatherhood books that we were excited about and it just doesn't go. Was I think what we heard there was in the process of it, of like, we got to sell this book. I was like, all right, maybe we should like do something that would like get attention for it going into it. And so I wrote a more kind of like personal op-ed type piece about parental leave and the need for men to talk about parental leave for Slate. And that, you know, in the way that Slate things can kind of do, sort of blew up and like, you know, all these, you know, I guess a lot of people clicked on, a lot of people read it. And so I think we were like, okay, great. This proves the theory. And sort of my agent mentioned that in like a next round of query letters. And then there were people who were like, hell yeah, I'm excited. And then were, I think rightfully like, whoa, well, like the rest of the book doesn't resemble that at all. Like we're a big press and we thought it would be really cool to run like a book of these like op-eds about why men should care for their children. Basically, I'm paraphrasing. And so that ended up being a couple of them, right? I think everybody is swamped and a lot of people are trying to write books and it's a hard market and all those things. So I just sort of felt like kind of puzzled and chagrined more than anything. But then there were presses, like smaller independent presses and university presses that I was like, this is like a round of things where like, frankly, like I love the work that a lot of these places are putting out. I've always sort of felt my work in conversation with that and maybe there would be a home for me and University of Iowa Press was one of those. And I went to Iowa. I love the University of Iowa Press. They've published a lot of really cool essays in particular, but also, you know, novels and poetry collections and they liked it. But it was just like that stroke of luck, really.
And then when you sold it and University of Iowa Press liked it, how did you celebrate? Were there any concessions that you had to make before selling it? Anything like that?
No. There were no concessions. It's been really wonderful working with them. And I think one of the really cool things just from hearing from other folks that I know who have published on, you know, indies or sort of more creatively open university presses like that is that you do get somebody's buying it because they are interested in what it is and what it could be and have less of a stake or interest in making it something else. Every part of the experience in terms of from the creative standpoint and from the just sort of like sharing ideas standpoint and talking things over standpoint and patience and all that has really been wonderful. I think that's sort of always kind of been the give and take, right? Is like, how much are you able to be treated in the way that you want to be treated? And how much do you want money?
Right. You mean when you're deciding between presses?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. If you're lucky enough to decide or just sort of the nature of kind of like what the business is, right? Like, which is not to say that you can't have that experience, big press or yada, yada, yada. But you know, that I think it's been a very lovely experience.
Awesome. How would you say that writing and publishing attachments has changed you as a person or an artist?
You know, I mean, I think one of the weird things about writing nonfiction that has any kind of personal element to it in general, right? And particularly like that's sort of the work that I've been doing for basically the entirety of my adult life. So there is this element, right, of which the writing is both a part of and a documentation of the various aspects of living that change me as a person naturally. Mm-hmm. So separating them is a challenge, even though it's weird, because I guess I would push back on the idea that like writing about your life is just sort of like a faithful record of what happened. It's just sort of like journaling or whatever. But I do think that there's sort of like this kind of fraught attachment between the two of them and the cyclical nature between the two of them. And so with this, right, I mean, I think the act of becoming a parent and the act of continuing to try to be a decent one has been the most transformative experience of my life. Like I've genuinely never felt like a person who has changed that much. I've always like had like weird envy for people who are like, oh, when I was in high school, this, I had like this whole thing that I was, and then I became this other thing. I was like, I've just been like kind of boring in me forever. And I still feel boring in me, but I do feel, I have a hard time even remembering what it felt like to operate in the world without parenthood as sort of the driving force of my consciousness as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that extends to as a writer too. Like, so yeah, those two things are wrapped up in each other. As a writer, one thing that's been wonderful, and I think, you know, again, this has to do with the conditions of living that I was writing in, but I feel this book feels, I keep using this, the word free, and it feels like really kind of woo and weird, but whatever. This book feels more free and in some ways more confident in just saying fuck it and being what it is and having a little fun on the page than I think maybe I ever have. And I think that everything about life with a kid and her being nine times more important than anything that I have to write, and me going through long periods of not writing anything and having every other thing in my life be more important than writing, and ultimately being like pretty fine with that, it changes the, at least for me, like the role that writing has in my mind and my conception of myself. And I think that necessarily then changes how writing feels, because it's in a different position in my life, and it's less fraught in some ways. And it's sort of, it feels like, oh, if I can do this, like if I get a chance to do this now, like let's see what happens with less expectation and more creativity, I think. I hope. Who knows? God, who knows? But
that's Lucas Mann. His most recent book, Attachments, Essays on Fatherhood and Other Performances, is available at the link in the show notes. If you like the episode, if you like what we've got going on here, please go to whatever platform you listen to this podcast on and rate us or review us. It would be so helpful. Oh, also, if you have a book coming out in fall 2024 or winter 2025, and you'd like to do an interview for Writing Stories, definitely get in touch. You can email me through the website, writingstories.org. I'll be recording for season 3 in July and September. Keep going!